Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
WCGC Atlanta and WCGC HD1.
A radio.com sports station.
Atlanta Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Morning show with John and Hugh on Sports Radio 92 on the Game. About that time to start talking about a little bit of football, getting ready for the fall with college football. Not that far away. The season is looming. And congratulations again to Neil and Flowery Branch for winning the two tickets, the VIP members tickets to the Hawks draft party a week from Thursday. And we'll do this little giveaway for Father's Day again tomorrow.
Yeah, but, you know, we're starting to get some you know, a little bit of backlash. My man, Bama fan, in the A, basically told me stop complaining. Say he's going to cook, going home for Father's Day and do a cookout for the dads on Saturday. That's great, but I'm talking about the kids, man. And then my man, Bama CXY 81 chimes in, and this is what I'm talking about, John. Mm-hmm. This is supposed to be Father's Day weekend, and you would never try mom like this. But he chimes in and says he took his 11-year-old daughter and her friends to Whitewater yesterday. She pulled him aside and said, she's called him dad, didn't even call him daddy, and asked him, could you not ride the ride with us? See, that's the level of disrespect dads got to go through. Like, she said, hey, you know, it's cool that you took us and all, but could you not, like, ride with us on the rides? Hey, Rose, I get it. Mom went through labor the whole time. She cared her for 9 months. She gets that love. I get that. I'm not hating on moms. But dang it, man. Dad,
back the kid up here. If I'm at the amusement park, I don't want dad.
No, I get it. But it's Father's Day weekend. You wouldn't try mom like that on Mother's Day, because mom gonna read you. How dare you tell me I can't do this with you? Don't you know what I went through to have you and all the problems, like all of that? And now you're like, dang. Like, mom lets you know, especially if she had a tough pregnancy. Like, shout out to moms, man. Mom sacrificed a lot. I get that.
Mm-hmm.
But dads, on the other hand, like, we make different types of sacrifices, and we don't get the same kind of love, you know, like diaper changing when we're watching the game or something, you know, something like that. When you're asking us to do something that, granted, we don't have to do a whole lot because mom's usually there with the child all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when we're watching the game, we're in the game. You try to ask us to change that. We ain't got time for all that, but we make that sacrifice for you because we love you. But at the same time, you know, you've been changing diapers all day. One more diaper ain't going to kill you. It ain't going to kill you to change that one diaper while we're trying to watch to see if the shot's being made or the game is being won. That one diaper, is it going to make that big of a difference if I change this diaper right now as opposed to 15, 20 minutes from now or even a commercial break? I don't understand. But, hey, you know, I'm not complaining. I'm just saying. I'm just saying. Hey, Jack, you know what I'm talking about? Like, is that one diaper change that I'm going to do right now going to make that big a deal in your life since you've been doing it all day?
Well, if diaper rash happens, then yes.
Nah, man, kid, you ain't going to keep in the diaper for days, John. A couple more minutes ain't going to kill you. If you been walking around with a poopy diaper long, a couple more minutes ain't going to kill you. It ain't going to kill you. Just leads to commercial break. Mm-hmm. But, hey, you know what? I digress.
You know, you wait 73 days to college football, and then maybe that's an issue.
That's a hell of a segue.
I know. Hey, I'm trying to get back to it. college football is 73 days away. The first game of the year will be Florida. The first Division I game of the year will be Florida, Miami, and Orlando. And that kicks off what is a pretty interesting opening weekend for the SEC. A lot of big games, some interesting games certainly around here are going to have our big attention because so many teams, three teams around here involved in the SEC in week one. Georgia opening against Vanderbilt. Fact is, the Bulldogs go on the road to open in conference play. Georgia State opens at Tennessee, and as tough as that is, they've got it easy compared to Georgia Tech, which opens on the road against the defending national champion Clemson Tigers.
I'm excited to see that one because I want to see what the mentality and what the mindset's going to be going into that game. I mean, you know, we all know what Clemson is, and for Georgia Tech to open with them, that's a great measuring stick. I know they're not where they want to be as far as, like, the talent and personnel
mm-hmm.
that they want in there. But, had a chance to see some of these young men at T-Day, Georgia Tech Day, and excited to see what kind of energy that they bring to that first game. I mean, it was a different energy there. No question about it. Georgia Tech had a different energy. It's going to be exciting to see how that translates for them in that first game against Clemson and knowing what Clemson has meant to the ACC over the last couple of years.
Yeah, even bigger than maybe Florida-Miami for the SEC will be the non-conference showdown in the opening game between Auburn and Oregon, and a big showdown between the Pac-12 and the SEC. Auburn has been made a two-point favorite in this game against Oregon. Remember, Auburn going to be breaking in a new quarterback against Oregon's star quarterback, Justin Herbert. And they still have it'll be one of the interesting stories of the SEC this fall, that quarterback battle down on the plains for the Auburn Tigers to take over for Jarrett Stidham. But Auburn, a two-point favorite, according to Vegas, over Oregon. Alabama opens as a 30.5-point favorite in this opening game against Duke that's going to be here in Atlanta. Now, Duke is going to be missing Daniel Jones, and this, of course, is not basketball. I don't know. I'm not expecting a whole lot out of this game between Alabama and Duke.
No, it's going to be a beatdown of epic proportion. I mean, come on now. Alabama against Duke, you just go out there, you just hope and pray if you're Duke that nobody gets seriously hurt. I mean, seriously, I that's how I look at this. It might be more of a game than I'm giving it credit for in the first quarter, but I don't think anybody is gonna argue about the outcome ultimately of this game.
Now, Florida's been made an 8-point favorite over Miami. Keep in mind, Miami, of course, is going to have a new quarterback at Tate Martell. They have a new head coach with Manny Diaz, who left the program for like a day and then came back to take over as the head coach after Mark Richt stepped down. So Florida's an 8-point favorite against Miami in Orlando. The Dogs open up a 24.5-point – they opened up at 18.5, and now they're up to 24.5-point favorite on the road in Nashville against Vanderbilt.
Yeah, that's tough. Is it because the quarterback is gone? Because I'm looking at the roster for Vanderbilt, and they got a freshman – a redshirt junior that is starting for them at quarterback.
Kyle Sherman not there no more.
Yeah, because he's gone. I think that's probably the biggest reason, because you don't know what you're going to get from the quarterback play from Mo Hansen. Hassan. Is it Hassan?
Yeah.
Yeah, Mo Hassan. You don't know what you're going to get from the quarterback play. I think that's probably the biggest reason.
And Georgia, of course, is going to be the number three team in the nation. So you got each of the top three teams in the nation, Clemson, Alabama, and Georgia, all playing big games to start the season in some form or fashion. And, yes, Alabama-Duke's a big game. It's a SEC versus ACC. It's a neutral site game. And, once again, Alabama, of course, how many games has Alabama played here? I mean, it's just unbelievable.
It seems like they open up every year where they beat the brakes off of somebody.
Or finish the year and beat the brakes off somebody.
Yeah.
And then you have Georgia Tech has been made a 34-point underdog on the road against Clemson. I mean, so five touchdowns, essentially, is what Clemson's going to be favored over Georgia Tech. And you mentioned that. Look, I'm not expecting a whole lot out of that game, Hugh. I just want to see Georgia Tech, because I don't know what to expect out of Georgia Tech. I know what to expect out of Clemson.
Well, I expect it to be a high-flying energy game. They might stick around the first quarter. That's what I want to see. There's still a lot of pieces that need to be added to this Georgia Tech team. There's no question about that. And the fact that, you know, when you look at the offensive line as a whole, John, they're probably averaging. They're not, I don't even think on average, they're like 300 pounds across the front line.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably their D-line is probably bigger than their offensive line, which is going to be a tough task for them. I just want to see them fight. That's all you can ask for at this point, you know, because this is something that Coach Collins is going to have to work through it. It's you want to see how tough these guys are, and you know, that's it. Nobody's expecting them to beat Clemson, but if they go out there and they have a great showing against Clemson, and don't get blown out, I think that's cost to start a little bit of momentum going into the season. That's a tough start for anybody.
Well, and especially considering that their second game is at home against South Florida, and South Florida, pretty darn good football team.
Yeah.
Charlie Strong and company going to come up here looking to make Georgia Tech quick 0-2. And then they get the Citadel in their third game. You would hope they might be able to win that. And then the whole month of September is interesting because you have, the Citadel, which wasn't it like 10-10 Citadel in Alabama at halftime of that one game?
Yeah, then it got real. Like it got back to life.
And of course, when you're facing the Citadel, it's always interesting. Then you have a game against Temple, which is, of all things, the team that the new head coach came from. You know, he's playing his old team in Temple.
Mm-hmm.
So you have, Collins coming in against his old team in the Temple Owls. So tough start for the new coach at Georgia Tech in the first month of the year. But back to this opening line, yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see what happens in the opening week. Always upsets. See, the one thing about college football, unlike the NFL, as we all know, there are no preseason games. So upsets happen because teams just haven't quite gotten, you always have new parts, and some new part breaks down at the wrong time.
Yeah, and they always say, like in college football, you want to better lose early than to lose late.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, but I don't foresee any of the teams that we just talked about having any hiccups. Now, the best you can hope for is a great showing by Georgia Tech. I just don't think physically they match up well against Clemson. I just don't. And, you know, I'm not trying to sell Duke short, but Alabama has been a juggernaut. And then you talk about the way that they got handled in the last game that they played in. It's just unfortunate that you're going to be the sacrificial lamb. Like, you're going to be the one that is going to be the diamond kid. You're going to be the little kid on the block that's going to get your drawers pulled up, and you're going to get a wedgie. You're going to get your drawers pulled up in the back of your cheeks, and you're going to be the one that's going to be disrespected the first game of the season.
Yeah, again, I think we're to the point, again, with we talk about Georgia Tech. Their bookend games are the toughest bookend games in the nation. No, nobody plays. Who plays Clemson and Georgia to bookend your season?
Nah.
Just them.
Nobody,
right? I mean, so it's ridiculously hard. 6-6 in their first year, I think, is a big win. If they can get to a minor bowl game, I think that's a big win. We're talking about college football 73 days out with John and Hugh on the morning show on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Brett McMurphy, our old friend who's now at Watch Stadium, tweets this out yesterday. Says, Georgia announces it will not sell alcoholic beverages in general seating areas of athletic venues for 2019-2020 academic year. Last month, the SEC approved schools' ability to sell alcohol at home games if the schools desired, and Georgia said it will not sell alcoholic beverages, especially when you're looking at football, in the general seating areas of athletic venues, which means that if you're really, I mean, this is true, I'm not mocking it, if you're wealthy and you can afford a suite, then you could drink alcohol. But if you're sitting in just the general seats, you can't.
And it also screws me that probably the kids out there in Athens don't know how to act, maybe. They don't really need the money that bad, but they don't know how to act either. They don't want to sell alcohol in the stadium.
In the story from collegefootballtalk.com, it notes this, too. It says that the Bulldogs and Gators, who are reportedly discussing options for their game in Jacksonville. So it could be that you could have beer sold at the world's largest outdoor cocktail party.
Oh, boy, if they do that, then that's going to change the game for a lot of people. That means you don't have to power drink before you go into the building. Mm-hmm. You can, like, just keep that buzz going. Like the whole day, you know, if you want to.
And the story also says that among the SEC teams that are thinking about selling alcohol at games this year are LSU and Ole Miss, but Georgia will not. LSU is considering it because, you know what we need? Beer at night games at Death Valley and Baton Rouge. That's what we need. But, you know, it's just such a farce, too, though, in a lot of ways. When I was a kid, I sold Coke, liquid. In the stands.
way to clean it up, John Fricky. Hey.
In the stands of football
games.
How
old were you when you were selling Coke?
Like 13, 14.
Were you moving like weight? What were you doing?
You know, I was one of those people that went through the stands, so like, oh, guys, go, Coke. And on cold days.
Can we clip that off, please? When I sold Coke. For real?
For real. Ice cold Coke. When it's 40 degrees and raining, nobody wants an ice cold Coke, right?
Yeah.
So what do you yell? You're 14. You know, you're walking up to the mixer. Mixer. And everybody has a flask. Everybody's
is that what
sneaking,
it was?
Yeah, everybody's sneaking booze into the game.
I still stuck on that, but I sold Coke. Okay. All right, John Fricky. You learn something new every day. Learn something new about the people you work with every day. As a young man,
Coca-Cola,
you were moving weight. Okay.
I just think, you know, they could do whatever they want to do. I understand that there's some trepidation on the part of people when you're selling.
Well, I guess it's like
alcohol,
when you think about it.
My experience was, and this is just mine, when I was at San Diego State, we played at Qualcomm Stadium. We sold beer at the games. It was never an issue. Never an issue, you.
Yeah, but it potentially could be nowadays because, you know, people that have beer muscles. That's the thing. Or maybe I'm overthinking this. But there's been times where people have had beer muscles that you just don't need to, you know, to add fuel to the fire. And that's how George is thinking in this matter. Don't want to add fuel to the fire.
Well, the great experiment of the SEC getting up to speed with some other teams will be interesting to watch. We'll see if there's any issues. And I'm sure the people get – look, the reporters covering the SEC will be monitoring this year. You can bet on that. And we'll see how much sales, you know, how much money do these schools stand to make from selling alcohol, too. That'll be another part of this. There's still this debate that's going on over the U.S. women's soccer team and what they did to Thailand yesterday, 13-0, and whether or not that was wrong. And Twitter, you know, calling out the U.S. soccer team for celebrating the 12th goal and the 13th goal. You shouldn't be celebrating. Did you have an issue with it? Because some people apparently did in that record-setting rout. That's next after a CBS Sports Minute and Boomer Esiason.
Dunn. 5-0 U.S. lead. Dunn cutting it back. Free shot there for LaBelle Block. And there's the second one from U.S. 6-0.
ESPN, as Sam Mewis gets a couple of the 13 goals, the United States scored 10 of them in the second half of a 13-0 blowout of Thailand. And welcome back to the morning show with John and Hugh on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. So many records for the United States yesterday in their World Cup opener. 13 goals, 13-0, largest margin of victory. Alex Morgan herself had 5 goals in the game. In the United States, 10 goals in the second half, and they were just coming in bunches. Among those that scored was Mallory Pugh, who scored her first ever World Cup goal. She's a hot young player in terms of her,
hot no, young.
I'm not no. talking about.
Well, no, she, I'm look, just saying. She's, when you said it, well, okay. I mean, you know, when you said it like that, I was thinking young.
Well, she's Dansby Swanson's girlfriend.
PYT.
So Dansby probably
pretty young. Thanks.
Dansby was probably jumping up and down yesterday when his girlfriend scored. No, I meant.
Were you jumping up and down when his girlfriend scored?
No, I meant that she's the next generation of star.
You're starting a little bit, just a little bit.
Okay. All
right. So, it's okay, Johnny. She's fine. It's okay.
But apparently, some people were mad about this whole thing because the United States. By the way, the U.S. So we understand the U.S. women are out there having to defend themselves now. Because they're under attack. There are people that are mad that they ran up the score. Alex Morgan's having to defend against the fact that they were celebrating goals like Mallory Pugh's, who was their first ever goal in a World Cup match, and saying, look, we're excited for our teammates. I mean, some of them are scoring for the first time ever in World Cup play. That's a pretty big moment. And the United States is a great team. They're the number one team in women's soccer in the world, and they're on form leading up to this World Cup. They played their last 4 friendlies were against Belgium, South Africa, New Zealand, and Mexico, and they had beaten those 4 teams by a combined 17-0. So this is the best team in the world right now by far, you know, in the United States. Do they really have to defend themselves for going time right now?
Listen, I had no problem with it. You're talking about they got to wait 4 years for this moment to celebrate. And for them to celebrate the way they did, I have no problem with it. People that have a problem with this, John, are the ones that don't understand the time and the commitment that they had to make. And not only that, women's sports as a whole really don't get a whole lot of love. They don't get a whole lot of respect. And I pointed out this morning that, you know, you talk about the WNBA is playing right now. And, you know, nobody's talking about that. We got a team right here in town that we really don't talk about that much. Because it's women's sports, they don't get the love that they deserve, because I don't know why, but they're world class athletes. So when I see the women's soccer team, as good as they are, go out there and celebrate the way that they did, that to me is 4 years of anonymity, not nobody talking about you until this moment, and just enjoying the moment while you're in it. Because when it's all said and done, it's only a few of those young ladies on that team that we're gonna actually remember. And one of them is Alex Morgan, because she's attractive. And she's the one that, when you think about the U.S. women's soccer team, she's the one that is probably the one that gets the most love because she is attractive. That's the only time that we care about it. And if you ask anybody on the streets, if they're being real, they're going to say that. And that's what it is. It's just those folks that, when they see this is one moment in 4 years where they get a chance to celebrate. The ones that are complaining about it have never played, in my opinion, a competitive sport in their life. And they don't understand the commitment that these young ladies put forth to play that game and the sacrifices that they make to play the game. So for you to celebrate the little bit of time that you're celebrating, I don't have a problem with that.
Is the criticism of the U.S. women's soccer team for its 13-0 shellacking of Thailand fair? This hour of the show brought to you by Renter's Warehouse. Let's get to some of your calls here. Taylor in Canton. Hey, Taylor, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you guys for having me. How are you guys doing?
Good, man.
Thank you, Hugh. I give you a round of applause. That was amazing. A hot take right there, or whatever you want to call it. Everybody should be talking about the history that they made last night, not the fact that, oh, they're celebrating too much. Like, no one understands the hard work. And like you said, 4 years and women's sports, you got to give them a round of applause. Stop talking about, oh, they should know what they're doing. They've been there. You don't lose that energy in a World Cup stage. You just can't.
Yeah, especially with right, especially when goal differential matters. I appreciate that, Taylor. Hey, look, Thailand's actually an okay team. I mean, they made the World Cup. They just played a friendly against China where they lost 2-0, and China's one of the better teams in the world. When you have a goal differential can come into play here, since there's no mercy rule, maybe they play somebody else later in the tournament in this group and get beat 15-0, and you suddenly, you know, you're in a situation where goal differential is not in your favor anymore. Or then maybe they lose 12-0 and goal differential is. So it matters how much you win by in the group stage. All right. This is not the knockout stage. This is the group stage. If it were the knockout stage, my guess is you would have seen more subbing taking place. I think they sub fully anyway. Nicholas and Conyers. Hey, Nicholas, welcome to the show.
Hey, how you guys doing today?
How you doing today?
Man, I'm doing great, man. Just at work right now, trying to get through the day. I see no problem with the team doing what they did. I mean, in today's society, it's like everyone's real, real soft about, oh, slow down, or you're beating the team too bad. These ladies trained years to do what they do right now. Why not go out there and prove that you're the best in what you do? If it means destroying the team 13-0 or 20-0, then prove your point. Prove that you're better. Each country has their best players on these teams for a reason. Our country's just better right now. Come back next year. Come beat us and prove that you can beat us.
I totally agree. And not only that, you're talking about women. Think about it like this. They are professionals. They are the best at what they do. They were handpicked to be on this team. But they go to the grocery store every day, wherever they live, and people will say, oh, what do you do? Oh, that's nice. You play soccer for the American team? They might get a little bit of love, but they don't get the same kind of love that you give to a basketball player, a baseball player, or any other sport that we watch on a regular.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's kind of the way it is with women's soccer.
Yeah, but that's the way it is with women's sports in general.
Well, not necessarily. I mean, tennis, you might get more.
Okay, but still, you could see who is the best player in the world. Well, you know Serena and Venus, but outside of that, who is the little young lady that beat Venus? I can't remember her name right now. Sloane's another one that's playing. You can see them walking down the street, John. We're not going to readily know who they are. That's the thing about it. Women put in the work to become professionals, but they don't get that kind of love. So for them to go out there and take that stage and act the way that they do, if you feel like they're acting up or celebrate excessively like they do, I don't have a problem with that. Because there's a lot of professional athletic women around here that, because we don't see their face or we don't find them attractive, we really don't know that much about them. I mean, and that's just the nature of the beast. That's a fact. It's not right, but that's just how it is. So if they take that moment to bring some attention to themselves as hard as they work for it, I don't have a problem with it.
All right, so the United States plays Chile in their next game. Now, in this group, there are four teams. The United States has to advance out of these four teams, Sweden, Thailand, Chile, and the U.S. Okay, so Sweden's going to be next up Sunday morning against Thailand. And Sweden beat Chile yesterday 2-0, all right? So now if Sweden goes out and beats Thailand, 15-0, and the United States only beats Chile 1-0, you can see where the aggregate becomes a problem here when the United States goes out to play Sweden. So, again, aggregate matters. There's no mercy rule for a reason, because aggregate does matter. It's not – when my daughter played high school soccer, Hugh, there was a mercy rule. It was 10-0, okay? Mm-hmm. But that's different. I mean, you just have to step up and play. Again, Thailand's not awful. United States is just better. I mean, it's really kind of that simple. And I don't really understand why people are all mad. They may be more mad that the U.S. was celebrating, but again, I think Alex Morgan was right when she said, look, when we're talking about players, that work so hard, like Sam Uys or Mallory Pugh, I mean, to celebrate the fact that they're getting, their first taste of glory in the World Cup on this stage is a good thing.
No, it is, John, and that's why I don't have a problem with it. See, that's what I'm saying. People that have never been in a competitive sport or have ever had to sacrifice to do what these young ladies are doing or do what these young ladies do, you can't understand that. And if you have and you don't understand it, I don't know why. And your dad must have owned the dealership and bought the team and gave you a spot on the club or whatever.
Right.
Because the level of commitment that it takes to do that. And I would venture to say that if you're not one of the big stars like Alex Moore, you're not making a whole lot of money to represent your American team. I don't think so. And not only that, you're waiting 4 years for this moment. And to go out there and let off a little bit of steam, I don't have a problem with that. But like I said, again, if you're the one that has a problem with this, I would venture to say that you have never been in a competitive atmosphere or played team sports, because you have to know what these women are have been through. Or you probably had your head stuck in the sand, knowing that how women's sports is looked at in this country. And that's why a lot of women go overseas, especially when they play basketball, to play sports, because they get more love over there and they get more money.
Wendell in Atlanta, you're on with John and Hugh. Hey, Wendell.
Hey, how's it going this morning?
What's going on?
I'm calling about this. Everyone complaining about the women soccer and these women running up the score. What it is, from my point of view, which is not really all that important, they've started this thing where nobody wins in high school and in schools, in elementary school, where, you know, like, you play a game and there's no winners. Everybody gets a pizza. Everybody gets a trophy. And these people are shocked that, oh, somebody would actually win like that. Like you say, these girls practice their whole lives to get to the point in the stage where they are in the World Cup. They have to show that they're winners.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, Wendell. It drives me crazy, this whole participation trophy. When my daughter started playing soccer at age 5, she played her first game in Hugh. They didn't keep score, right?
They never do when they're young,
right, yeah. You know, but that still bothers me, you know. So they play. My daughter scores twice. They win 3-2. She comes over to the sidelines and she says, Daddy, out loud, Daddy, did we win? And instead of saying, well, honey, you know, I mean, you know, you don't keep scoring games like this. I looked at her and went, damn right you won. You won 3-2. Well, and I yelled it out.
I used to say, yeah. When my son used to ask me, I'd be like, hey, man, as long as you have fun, that's the only thing that matters at that age. Because, you know, they little minds and stuff, they get all sensitive about it. But when you get older, yeah, it's about wins and losses.
Hey, the U.S. Open's coming up. We're going to tell you about golf. We're going to tell you about that in a moment. Andy and Randy are going to be at Twin Peaks and Buckhead tomorrow for the, Twin Peaks and Kennesaw. Twin Peaks and Kennesaw, noon to 3 tomorrow for the midday show. Hang out tomorrow on Saturday afternoon with Andy and Randy at Twin Peaks. Oh, it's a Saturday? Oh, okay, I'll get this right. Let me start over. Andy and Randy will be at Twin Peaks in Kennesaw. I'll get the right place on the right day. Andy and Randy will be at Twin Peaks in Kennesaw on Saturday from noon to 3. Hang out and enjoy delicious man food and all that kind of great stuff with Andy and Randy at Twin Peaks in Kennesaw on Saturday, noon to 3. Right? I got it straight. I was thinking about Brad Faxon. Brad Faxon, famous golfer, great pro golfer, analyst for ESPN and Fox Sports, is going to join us and talk about the U.S. Open, which begins tomorrow at Pebble Beach. We'll do that next on The Morning Show with John and Hugh on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and 92.9thegame.com. Morning Show with John and Hugh on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Another beautiful day in the greatest city in America, in Atlanta. Getting ready for the U.S. Open at Pebble Beach. And really a cool thing that's going to happen is going to be a great... This is what Father's Day weekend is all about, is Sunday, U.S. Open. And that'll be the great... don't bug me on Sunday, okay? As a huge Tiger fan that I am. So Tiger tees off tomorrow, Hugh, in a super group with Jordan Spieth and Justin Rose.
Tiger Woods, y'all.
And because they're playing in Pebble, they tee off, are you ready? At number one, 5:09 p.m. at Pebble Beach tomorrow night. That's when they start. So we'll be playing golf till like 9 o'clock at night tomorrow night. That'd be so cool. We welcome into the program longtime PGA player, had a lot of success on tour, now an analyst for Fox. Brad Faxon joins us this morning on the WadeFord.com hotline. Morning to you, Brad.
Good morning, you guys. How's it going?
Pretty good, pretty good. Now, Brad, I got a question to ask you. I don't know if you've seen some of the promos leading up to this weekend's golf tournament, but how do you leave the hottest golfer, Brooks Koepka, out of the promos?
Well, I'm pretty close to this one, because the promo that Brooks is using to help motivate him, and he does a lot of that chip-on-the-shoulder sort of stuff, is an old promo that he's seen that Fox has run for a long time. It wasn't a promo for this year's U.S. Open, and every other promo that Fox has run has a picture of Brooks. So I think it's his way of just kind of motivating himself, trying to feel like he's an underdog again, and it's worked for him. It's unfortunately, it's not accurate, but it's a good story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it definitely is, because that has been, you know, what everybody's talking about. But to that storyline, why for him does it feel like, or does it feel like in golf in general, that nobody really gives him the respect and the love that you know he deserves at this point, because he's won as much as he's won?
Well, he sure has. I mean, he's won, you know, four of the last eight major championships, the last two U.S. Opens. It's bringing back memories of Curtis Strange in 88 and 89. I don't know why. He definitely gets his deserve from all his brethren. We at Fox can't wait to watch this guy play. I mean, he's picked apart these golf courses like you can't imagine, with power, strength, and grit. And he's fun to watch.
He is fun to watch, but, you know, he hasn't broken out yet into kind of the larger, you know, public here beyond, Brad Faxon, golf analyst for Fox. You know, you got to kind of, you know, break out and be like, for example, Jordan Spieth, for example, when he started to win, he struck a nerve a little bit. Certainly, you know, Tiger set the standard. But, you know, even Ricky Fowler, you know, best player never to win a major, he's on every commercial you could possibly imagine. Is there a personality thing with Brooks that he isn't, he just a quieter kind of guy?
I think so. It's hard to imagine a guy could have won as much as he has and not be more popular. He's number one in the world rankings, but he refuses a lot of media requests. He's pretty stoic on the golf course. I think off the course, he's certainly a nice guy, but you mentioned Fowler. Fowler's 11th in the world and a heck of a player, but he's got way bigger Q rating, you know, for his success on the course and what his popularity off the course. You know, Fowler is nice to people. He smiles a little bit, dresses differently. But, you know, I say Kepka's a quiet guy. He doesn't let people inside. And if he wants to be more popular, he could easily change.
Yeah, that's a decision that, of course, yeah, it's up to him, obviously, to do that. But, you know, golf looks at the U.S. Open at Pebble Beach beginning tomorrow as they get ready for the U.S. Open. You know, talked about Curtis Strange in 88 and 89, last back-to-back, and now he can win three in a row, which is just an unheard-of, accomplishment. So how do you kind of handicap this? Certainly Koepka, Brad Faxon, has been the man at the U.S. Open, the man at the majors, but the last major we saw was Tiger, and Tiger is certainly a guy that is, you know, on top of his game right now. So let's see what we can have in terms of possibly getting Tiger another major. Could that happen?
I think it could for a few reasons. Number one, his success here at Pebble Beach in 2000, probably the greatest golf that's ever been played in golfing history, is his 15-shot win. He took apart Pebble. And it's a different-looking golf course this year than it was in 2000. And I think it's really open for so many different players, and there's so many great stories. For us at Fox to have Tiger winning this year's Masters, for Koepka to have a chance to win three in a row, Dustin Johnson, who's been so close here and has had a chance to win in 2010 with the lead, Rory McIlroy shot 61 last week. The good at, foreign players that have a chance to win, Justin Rose, who won at Marion in 2013, Molinari, who's great, Tommy Fleetwood. I mean, there's a great, great story here in almost every single player that you look at. So, there's some sneaky guys that could win here. I love the fact that Adam Scott's played well lately. He needs to make some putts down the stretch. Patrick Cantlay is kind of jumped up the world ranking list, won at Memorial a couple weeks ago. So, I mean, there's a lot going on here. There's this course. I'm sitting out here at the lodge looking at the Pacific Ocean and the 18th hole, and the USGA and all the grounds crew fixing, cutting these fairways and cutting the cup into 18. But it's so still out here right now. I think the course can be had today. I think the greens are still soft enough that the scores will be low. There's not a breath of wind out here. It's bright blue, sunny skies, which we haven't seen in any of the opens here in the summertime. You know, in June, it can have that marine layer and be cold and windy. It's absolutely perfect right now.
All right, so Brad Faxon, final question here. Who do you think, you mentioned, you know, the biggest names of the world, right?
Dark horse.
You know,
it's a dark horse.
Yeah, and, you know, how hot that, you know, Jordan's rounding into form, Rory, Tiger, and you mentioned some others, of course, one and two with Koepka and Johnson. Who do you like in this event this week? Who's going to win?
Well, I heard you say, one of you guys said dark horse, and I forgot to mentioned one of the most compelling stories in the world. If this could happen, could Phil Mickelson finally win the U.S. Open and complete his career Grand Slam? He won this year in February, the AT&T here at Pebble Beach, for the fifth time, I believe. He's finished second in the U.S. Open six times. So could he win and be the oldest winner of a major? I mean, that would be maybe the greatest story we could hear from. I watched Matt Kuchar hit some balls yesterday. Kuchar's number one on the FedEx points list this year. He's a great story. There's a guy from England named Matt Wallace that's won four times on the European Tour that not many guys have heard of over here. Matt Wallace has moved up in the world ranking to 26th. He's been in contention in a lot of the bigger events lately. He'd be a sneaky pick if you wanted to get somebody to off the radar screen. I still think a guy like Jim Furyk, the Ryder Cup captain, who's won the U.S. Open before at Olympia Fields, this is a kind of course where Webb Simpson, the shorter hitters, really have a chance.
Brad, appreciate your insight. Thanks very much. Brad Faxon of Fox, and we look forward to the U.S. Open.
Happy being with you guys.
Thanks. A great Father's Day, too, there, Brad. Do appreciate
Thank
it. Brad Faxon
okay,
joining us. Phil would be a great story. I want Tiger to win.
Tiger Woods, y'all.
Get that second major. I just don't want Koepka to win. For some reason, I don't have anything against the guy. I just think he's kind of dry.
You don't like him.
Well, I just think he's boring. We have a lot to work on. Andy and Randy getting ready. Top of the hour. Very busy Wednesday. Hey, Tiger doesn't tee off till 5 o'clock tomorrow night. Primetime golf. That'll be a lot of fun. Andy and Randy, top of the hour on Sports Radio 90 Time the Game.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 40%. Up to 40% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.